Hello, everyone. Welcome to Take Human Action PA, episode 44. I'm Calvin. I'm your host. We have a very special guest tonight. Before I introduce him, I do want to mention that we still have some Take Human Action Tour events going on for the Mises Caucus. So if you're looking for details on that, go to takehumanactiontour.com. We still have five more cities coming up. And lots of good speakers, including Tom Woods, Maj Touré, Jeff Dice, Scott Horton, Ian Crossland, a lot of good people coming up. So for a full list, you can go in the comments and then, again, sign up at takehumanactiontour.com. So definitely do that. And with that, I'll go to introducing our guest. We might have some additional hosts joining us later, and I'll mention them if they are able to make it in the time for this episode. But for now, our guest, he is a 24-year-old Marine Corps veteran, currently works for the state government, I believe it was. And he's come back after being stationed abroad, and he's looking to shake up state politics with his run for state house, and I'll bring him on now. Everybody, welcome Elijah Stretching. How are you doing, Elijah?
Hey, how's it going? Thank you for having me on here, Calvin.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. Ever since BJ told me about your story, I've just been really fascinated by the whole thing. So, yeah, I don't even know where to start, but I don't know. So, I mean, it's just great to have you with us here and have able to run in a special election like this that makes it so that we can skip the signatures and just hit the ground running right away.
Right. Yeah, it's always it's always good when you can get around some barriers that they place in there. And, you know, this is my first time running for everything. Just learning the stuff that you have to do to run in our completely free elections in Pennsylvania and the United States, yeah. You know, they're supposed to be easy and simple. It's really like they set up these things to make the common man not be able to run or not want to run. And then they try to set up like traps for you. And they try to get you out on, what is it called? Little points and details. You know what I mean? Like I've already heard stories about how they'll challenge people's candidacies and things like that. They're just to keep the two-party system on the ballot and keep everybody else off. That is so ridiculous. Like, that's unbelievable that, like, that actually happens. And now I'm starting to learn this stuff, and now I'm knowing. So, yeah, I'm glad we're on this. I'm glad the special election happened there, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, even without the signature requirements, they still always seem to find a way to ding you one way or another. Yeah, so let's talk about you. We'll start at the beginning there. So what was it like for you growing up? Because I know it was a little bit of a unique situation compared to most of us. So, start wherever you like.
Okay, so I'm 24 now, but from when I was born, well, not when I was born there, when I was 3 until when I was 18 there, I was in the foster care system. I actually have 9 siblings. I have 3 other brothers and 6 sisters. So pretty much since I was 3, we were separated. The reason was my biological parents had actually pretty much just abandoned us at one point in time. I believe it was around when I was 2. They took off and left us alone in the house. So pretty much my siblings, who were a little bit older there, they'd be out, you know, in the stores, you know, stealing little things like saltine crackers and stuff like that, and, you know, bringing them home and asking people for money. And then we ended up, like, I remember this, actually, from when I was young. I remember eating dog food and cat food, and that's how me and my sisters and our brothers were, you know, living for a little bit there. And then, you know, I've heard multiple stories of exactly how the state moved in and actually put us in care. But the one my sister told me is when I was pretty young there, I started choking on something. And she picked me up and rushed me to the hospital because the hospital was down the street. And once I got to the hospital, you know, they helped me and everything. and I guess I was like almost passed out or something like that. And they asked my sister, they're like, "Oh, where are your parents at?" And she said, "We don't have parents." And they're like, "What do you mean you don't have parents?" So they brought somebody over to our house there, and they seen all of us were in there, and you know, all of us were pretty badly clothed. A lot of my siblings weren't even potty trained, or you know, they didn't know how to use the bathroom. So the state moved in, took us, and separated all of us there. And you know, I know the state had to act on what they acted on, but they really separated me and all my siblings though, and wouldn't let us see each other. That's pretty ridiculous. And the homes that they would place us in, some of these homes, I don't know how they passed the standards and requirements that are required for, you know, people to be foster parents. I've witnessed ridiculous stuff in the foster care system. I've witnessed things from, you know, foster parents putting cigarettes out on kids' heads to kids getting beaten to kids getting raped. I had, you know, an experience with somebody locking me down in the basement for a couple of days. I had experience with people trying to get me to stand naked in a line with other kids. The foster care system, it's messed up in Pennsylvania, and people don't do anything about it. My sister had been raped in foster care. My other sister got sexually abused. My brother got sexually abused, one of them. It's ridiculous. Nobody did anything about the foster care system. So it was a rough time. I bounced around from home to home, bounced around from school to school. And then on my senior year, I was up in Wilkes-Barre with my aunt. And, you know, of course, like all foster kids, foster system's really made to, you know, end the foster kid up in prison. You know, it's set up like that. You can't go over to people's houses. You can't be a normal kid. They dope you up on all types of medication and pills. They give you all these diagnoses. And you know that affects your life later. Almost affected me joining the military. Yeah. So pretty much when I turned 18, I was coming down the hallway in this school called GAR up in Wilkes-Barre. And I was a little bit late for class, and the vice principal called us. And he said, he was like, "Hey, what are you doing out in the hallway here? You're supposed to be in class." And we were like, me and my buddy was like, and then there was a Marine Corps recruiter right beside the gym there. And he was like, "Oh, they were talking to me." And we were like, yeah, we were talking to him. And the vice principal, he was like, "Oh, yeah, that's great. I was in the National Guard and this and that. You guys are trying to find a career for yourself. I like that. Go ahead, talk to him. I'll tell your teachers you're trying to make a career for yourself." So we were like, okay. Marine Corps recruiter said, "Oh, yeah, now you owe me." So I ended up going to the recruiter station there. And I talked to other recruiters, too. And I asked them, like, you know, what's the hardest branch? Because I wanted to gain respect for myself. I got told by a therapist one time, you know, one of the ones that diagnosed me with something. I got told that respect isn't given, it's earned. So you have to earn respect for yourself. You want people to respect you, you have to earn that respect. People don't just give that out. So I asked what was the hardest and toughest branch to go into so I can earn my respect. And he said, "Well, I'll be honest. The Army recruiter told me, I'll be honest. The hardest branch there is the Marine Corps, but you don't want to join them. They're a cult and they're crazy." And I was like, "All right, yeah, I'll definitely join them." So I ended up joining. I went all over the world, met the best friends I'll ever meet. We talk every day still. Some friends I haven't seen in 2-3 years, and we still talk every day. Like, they'll do anything for me. They give me anything in a heartbeat. Love my boys and love my sisters out there. And, yeah, I got to travel the world, go all over the Pacific over there. Met my wife, have a kid now. Her birthday is today, actually. We just had a bunch of celebrations and everything. So it was a good time today. They actually just got here at the end of January. The visa got approved and everything. So, yeah, that was pretty good. And it's kind of crazy. In the United States, like, they make it harder for you to get somebody here legally than illegally. Like, I had to jump through how many loopholes just to get my kid and my wife over here. Like, the amount of paperwork. People who don't know English or English isn't their first language, it's impossible almost to fill that paperwork out by yourself. I'm a whole graduate of, you know what I mean, a advanced school in Pennsylvania over here, but I'm struggling, you know. I was struggling with that visa.
You mind if we stop there for a minute? Because there's a lot to unpack in what you've said so far. So, I've heard some stories about the foster care system, but that is just a whole new level. Like, how old were you?
Messed up.
How old were you when that whole thing started?
I was 3 when I first got into foster care.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So you were like down the middle in terms of your siblings?
I'm actually the second youngest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I guess they're all out of the system now. I hope they're all doing all right.
At first, a lot of them weren't doing as well, but we've been, you know, us who have been doing well, been reaching out to the other ones and, you know, helping them with stuff. So everybody's doing a lot better than they were. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. How long were you in the Marines for?
I was in there for about 4 years there.
Okay, so where did you end up being stationed while you were in there?
I was in Okinawa. Okinawa was my main duty station, but I was an ammunition technician, so we got fapped out a lot to different units. So pretty much we can work in what is called ASP, so ammunition supply point. We can either be working there or we can be attached to infantry units. Or it could be you could call it a special forces unit. My buddy, he was just attached to, have you ever heard of MARSOC?
Mm-hmm.
Marine Corps Raiders. It's kind of like the Marine Corps Special Forces there. You can get attached to them. You can get attached to recon. Pretty much anybody who needs bombs and bullets. We're the people for you. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I have never heard Okinawa mentioned outside of like the World War II battles. So, So what's going on? Why do we still have stationed troops there?
That's a good point, but I'm gonna be honest. They really don't want us there. A lot of the people don't want us there at all.
Really?
And I understand it. A lot of Americans do a lot of stupid stuff over there, so I don't even blame them. I don't blame them at all. I tell you one thing though. This might not be their people's view, but it's their government's view out there. I know their government believes that if we were to leave, China's going to just beat the hell out of them. Oh, my bad if I'm not allowed to say that on here.
No, I mean, I don't think it matters, but it's kind of funny. Like, usually I know this stuff, but I don't even know, like, if it's its own country or if it's part of another country or something.
Yeah, Okinawa, it's part of Japan.
It's part of Japan. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, so they... like Okinawan specifically, like I'm going to say, because, you know, in like we pretty much after World War II up into 1970s, we had complete control of that there. And U.S. military did the most terrible things out there after World War II. They were doing the worst. And, you know, like Kaho's parents didn't really like Americans until they met me. You know, they love me and everything. My my wife's parents and everything. They actually just bought me these shoes. They're like $200. And her dad's one of the fire chiefs from out there in Okinawa. There's like a couple of them in Japan, and he's one of them. So, you know, he's making money. And and her mom's a nurse and everything. I believe she's a nurse practitioner. And her father just retired. But they can, like, they'll tell you, like, their parents told them the craziest stories. And, like, my wife's grandfather, he hated Americans. He specifically hated, I'm going to say, Black Americans. I'm going to explain why. He wasn't racist, and I'm going to explain why. So basically, when he was young, right, it was during World War II and everything, he was just playing outside, he said. He told Kaho this story. He was playing outside, and this Japanese soldier came running by, and then these American soldiers came over and shot them. And then he hid behind, like, a wall there, and then the American soldiers went by. And then when he walked over to the Japanese man, the soldier was asking for water. So he came over and he gave the Japanese soldier water, and the water was coming out. He was swallowing the water, and it was coming out of his neck there. And he seen that. And from that point forward, he just hated American soldiers. And it happened to be a Black soldier who did it. So, so he just didn't like them. at that point in time.
So, wow.
Yeah, but that stuff happened. He's seen, he told Kahu stories about like how Americans would come off base and just shoot people and go back on base, and there's nothing anybody could do in Japan at that point in time because we had it. You know what I mean? It was under our control and everything.
During the occupation.
Yeah, they had no right to do anything to the American soldiers or the American airmen, yeah, or Marines or anybody. And he said they'd come on base, grab women, and take them on base. You'd never see them again. That side of American history we don't learn and nobody talks about, right? But it happened. It was going on. And then
I definitely never heard that.
yeah. Once the SOFA agreement started going into place, and you know the Japanese were allowed to arrest like military over there, a lot changed after that. Oh, a lot changed after that.
Wow.
And for the better, yeah. But I'm not gonna say it was every bit of military doing that, but it was a lot. It was enough. One is enough.
Yeah.
I don't understand how anybody could do that. I just think you gotta. That's a personal issue that nothing can work out of. You know what I mean? You can't work out of that. That's,
yeah,
you're sick in the head.
Well, going back to you though, like with all that stuff in the backdrop, like how is it that you ended up apparently meeting and marrying your wife over there?
When we got over there, well, I'll say before I went over there, I was in MOS school, so I was at Fort Lee, Virginia, and I met this guy. His name is Hines. It's one of my good buddies. He's actually a musician now. He makes like songs and stuff. He's actually getting pretty popular on Instagram, so go see him. But he told me he pretty much grew up out there because his father was in the Marine Corps. So he told me like, you know, people to talk to and, you know what I mean, spots to go to. And he basically told me to don't hang out with military. Go hang out with the locals. Go talk to the locals. They're going to show you stuff that the military has no clue about. So when I got there, I started meeting up with some of his friends who were Japanese. And then they started introducing me to other people. And then, soon I got a friend group going on. Some of my buddies from the Marine Corps there. We'd hang out with some of these Japanese women over here. They, you know, it was just a good old friend group. Six dudes, six girls. We'd always go out, go to American Village. And then soon I started hanging out with this girl named Kaho, or she started hanging out with me, should I say, you know, whatever. But we started hanging out for a while there. And then next thing you know, we started realizing we got a lot of stuff in common, even though we're, you know, we're completely different cultures, we make each other laugh all the time, you know. We just really clicked, and it's pretty much a wrap after that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you touched on it a bit already, but was there initial resistance from the family that might have stopped you from getting together?
Yeah, initially they were kind of like, "Oh, you have an American in the house, and he's in the military. Yeah, get away from him. Don't be around him," because the basic, idea is if your daughter dates a military man, he's going to get her pregnant and he's going to leave and go back to the States. That's the whole idea out there, you know? So, when she got, you know, she got pregnant there, and I'm not going to say it was exactly planned. You know, things happen. We were pretty young there. And when that all happened and everything, she was nervous. And I told her, you know, I'm never going to leave you. I'm not going to do anything like that with, like, what these other men are doing out here. I don't do that, you know. I'm going to be here for you. And I told her parents that. And, I earned her father's trust over there. You know, it took a little bit, but, you know what I mean? Me and him are really, really tight now and everything. But, they kind of were worried about it. But her grandfather and her grandparents really didn't like it at all. They really didn't like it, but,
yeah,
you know. Once they seen my our daughter and everything, their minds started changing too. And, you know, they love my kid. And, you know, I think people started to realize, or they started realizing, like, you know, maybe not everybody in America is that bad, you know.
Right. Yeah. There's been some time since then. I can imagine that the old wounds, even if it has been this long, they don't heal that quickly. But, you know, it's good things like that are starting to overcome it.
Yeah, but the people my age and everything, though, in in Japan. They have no clue about what happened back then. They don't care. They're just whatever.
Yeah.
They see another American. They're like, oh, cool. He's from America. Where are you from? California, bro? That's what they'll say to me. You from California, yeah. New York, Florida. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm from Pennsylvania. Philadelphia. And,
yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
The nicest people in the world there, too. They're the nicest people. They'll do anything for you. It's such a different culture out in Japan. It's so, it's not like you go there over to Japan and you try to come back to the United States and be happy. It's crazy. You can't. It's just,
I only spent a couple weeks there myself, but I can't disagree with anything you're saying. Like
right.
all that stuff is true. It's like right. a whole different world out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Must have been a bit of a cultural adjustment too. Like taking your shoes off at the door was one of the first ones.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's others I'm not thinking of. Like I had to get used to not having eggs for breakfast.
Yeah. And then they just how they sit there and eat a lot of the times there, and you're sitting on the ground there.
Right. Yeah. No chairs. A lot of them are.
Sometimes people don't even have beds. Some of them. You know what I mean? Some Japanese citizens.
Just like the mats. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're perfectly comfortable that way sometimes. I'm like,
yeah. I tried it. It was fine. I just thought I was dreaming when I saw the legless chairs. It's like, what is this?
Yeah. It's so peaceful out there, and. Their society is built on such like a respect towards others there. You go into a train, it's silent. It's silent. People aren't eating. They aren't drinking. They're quiet. Their heads are down. And people are walking in filed lines in Tokyo there. There's no trash on the ground in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
There's no trash. Like, that's how much bigger than New York City. But
yeah, that's unheard of. Trash.
Like, I can't believe it. I couldn't believe my eyes when I seen that. Another thing, too. They people are allowed. Now, DUIs there, it's a cap full of alcohol. You're going to jail. You know what I mean? If you drink and drive like that. But, I mean, that's a good thing, too. You know what I mean? You really shouldn't be drinking and driving. But you can walk outside and have a beer in your hand. You can walk around. You can, you know what I mean? As long as you're not causing any trouble.
Yeah.
They don't care. You know what I mean? It's things like that little freedoms they had there that you know, it's just very different, you know.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. You know, that's a good word for it. I do want to get back to when you came back to the States, though, because we were talking in the pre-show, you know, and it like no sooner than you got back to the States. Well, first, you know, that was right at the beginning of the pandemic, so already there was a huge culture change right around the time you got back. Why don't you start there? Just tell us how that experience was for you.
All right. So I got back there. I got back basically like towards the end of 2019 there, and really into 2020 there. So once I got back, you know, I was planning. We were planning on getting the visa done, and you know, she was going to come over here and everything. And then all of a sudden, boom, coronavirus hits there. And I was a week away from getting my plane ticket and flying back over to Japan there. But my supervisor, I was working for the federal government at the time, at the Social Security Administration. My supervisor told me, hey, you might want to wait a little bit to see how this coronavirus thing. I heard that it's worse than the flu, she told me. I heard it's worse than the flu. You might want to wait a little bit. I heard the government might, you know, kind of shut down the ports. And I was thinking, like, there's no way. You know what I mean? It can't be that bad. So, you know, I was about to fly out that next week, and then boom, they shut down, you know what I mean, a lot of the flights going out to Japan. And Japan blocked off their borders. And the United States blocked off their borders. And pretty much we were separated for a while with that. But then the whole thing happened with George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter movement there and everything. Now, with Black Lives Matter, I never really knew much about them at all. So a lot of people told me to support Black Lives Matter and donate to Black Lives Matter, you know, something of that sort there. And I really didn't know about them. I don't usually jump into things without knowing what it is. I do a little bit of research on it, but Like, if I don't like something or it doesn't sit right in my soul, I won't go with it. You know, if it doesn't feel right to my character, I won't do it. So basically, I created this group, and I thought it would be a perfect opportunity to get, like, our community together, because that's what we did in the Marine Corps there. We got together and made each other better. So if it worked in there, I figured it would work out here, too, you know? It worked in there with people with different ranks who thought they were better than others and everything like that. So if it works out there like that, it's going to work in here. So basically, I created this group called the 2020 Freedom Fighters. And I did it with a couple people. My friend Jimmy G up there in Wilkes-Barre, Shay, Sam, we all started it up there. And then basically we started doing rallies. We were teaching people, you know, about educational tools, how to apply for college. Having people, you know, clean up the city, you know, telling people to be more accountable for themselves, you know, instead of blaming things on other people, be more accountable for yourselves and the people around you. You see something, say something. You know what I mean? By that, I mean, you see somebody doing something wrong, tell them they're doing wrong. Don't just sit back and watch them do it wrong and then that lead to their demise. You know, just teaching people, you know, basic principles and things like that. Like, here's how we should be acting as a community. We should hire more law enforcement in our community. We were also, you know, trying to encourage people to, you know, apply for permits to carry weapons. You know, we were trying to tell people to do it this way instead of getting caught up by the police and having them arrest you when you could possibly just get a permit from the courthouse, you know, or something like that. We were just telling people basic things to try to help them out and try to help our community out. And then we started getting a lot of people at our rallies. We started getting quite a bit of people and. We started getting on the news and started getting attention. And then, you know, people started just coming up and just giving us stuff. And people would bring food to our rallies and people bring waters and drinks and speakers. And, you know, photographers would start coming. The news people would start coming. Our mayor came. We had Senator Hayward Art come from down in Philly. He came up to our thing. So we started getting a lot of buzz down there. And we started getting on the news a lot. And, I started doing interviews. And then I'll say about maybe a couple weeks after I started it and we started getting a lot of buzz, basically I got this call on my phone. It was from a man named John. I can't remember his last name. I wish I had my old phone still so I can remember it. But I remember his name was John there. He wanted to speak with me about, he was like, oh, I like what you're doing with, you know, you're fighting for Black lives and you're doing this and that. And I was fighting for Black lives, but I was more fighting for our community. You know what I mean? Like, I want our communities to succeed together. I'm not really looking at color. I want our community to succeed together. Now, I definitely care about Black lives and everything that was going on at that point of time. But again, I want to see us together, you know, form together to succeed. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's meet up and everything. Let's talk about this and whatever, whatever. So we came and we met down by Gennetti's in Wilkes-Barre there. So there was this, there's like this cheese steak place. I can't remember the name of the cheese steak place up in Wilkes-Barre, but we met up in there and my buddy Mir came with me. And, you know, cause you know, you never really go by yourself everywhere. You never know what people are up to, especially when we were running that, because we had people come to our rallies and they'd be hecklers. People would come up and say, oh, they try to grab the mic out of my hand. This one guy grabbed the mic out of my hand this one time. He said, oh, let's break into the store. Come on, break into the mall. Go do this, go do that. And then he took off running and the police chased him and everything. We had the mayor up there one time. He came over to our thing and he wanted to hop on the mic. So I was like, okay, man, whatever. So he hopped on the mic and he was like, I understand your pain. I understand your pain. And then he took a knee and then everybody booed him and he ran away. Yeah. Wow. Like, I was like, bro, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Like, he literally got on his knee. None of us were doing that. And he got on his knee, said, I understand your pain, and put his fist up. And we were like, all right, whatever. And then people were like, whoa, get out of here, get out of here. And he took off running. But, yeah, we would have some hecklers come. We had somebody destroy during one of our rallies. And there was a lot of people there, so we couldn't see. But they destroyed the whole statue there in Wilkes-Barre. They sprayed it with the silly string and painted it and put blood all over it. And then they tried to write our names at the bottom of it there to make it seem like we were doing it. You know, it's that's some crazy stuff was going on like that. Jeez. So we had this gentleman and we met him down in the shop down there and he offered us $300,000 there to like pretty much continue. He said, you need to speak more about Black Lives Matter and how Black Lives Matter is gonna, you know what I mean, lift your what do you say, your culture out of poverty and this and that and do all this and that. And then I really thought about it. I was, you know, during the whole time when he was saying this stuff to us, and he was like, oh, we're gonna provide you with this and provide you with that. All you gotta say is these things. You gotta, you know, you gotta wear these things. You gotta wear the Black Lives Matter things like this. And we were like, okay, that sounds cool. $300,000, that's a lot of money. That could really help out our group. But then I started asking him questions. We were there. I was like, you know, that sounds really good. But like, to be honest, man, like I never see Black Lives Matter out here. I never see them out in the hood. I never see them out in, you know, I don't see them down in Philly. Because we used to go down to Philly a lot there. I don't see them down in Philly. I don't see them down in Kensington. I don't see them down by Hamilton Park. Have you?
Yeah. Well, I work near Kensington. So I can tell you, having gone there like all the time, I don't see it.
Yeah, just not I've there. Never seen Black Lives Matter down there. And you know where I do see them, though? I see them out in L.A. I see them out in L.A., down in Hollywood and everything. I see them in mansions. I see them in million-dollar houses. I don't see them in Detroit. I don't see them in Chicago. You know what I mean? Like, this is the stuff I was bringing up to this guy. And he was like, well, that's because, you know, things are trickling down. It takes a long time for money to go here and this way and this way and this way. And I was saying, but like, I was like, just telling him like, okay, that's cool. But like, I really don't see him around in anything. I do care about Black lives, but I want to bring our community together. I feel like a lot of this is causing division. I feel like people are saying Black Lives Matter on the television, like on CNN, but they really are trying to paint a bad picture for Black people. You know, they're trying to make it seem like if you don't support this, you're racist. And I don't believe that, because I know a lot of Black people who wonder, where's the money going? And we did find out where the money was going, like last year, is going into the lady's backyard and to her baby dad and the million-dollar houses. And I was suspecting that the whole time. And I was just, this man's looking at me over here. He's in the home on my phone.
Yeah, something tells me you weren't surprised.
Yeah. It was a whole thing. But that gentleman, I was like kind of debating him the whole time with it. You know, I was like, well, what about this? What about this? What do we have to say? And then I was like, okay, well, what if we say this? Why do you want us to say that? You know, but he was kind of getting like a little bit frustrated with me there. And he said, okay, all right, well, think about it. And, you know, we'll get back with it. And then I was like, okay. So I contacted him again, and I was like asking him a couple more questions. I wanted to ask him a couple more questions. So I contacted him. I called him, and then he didn't pick up. So I left him a voicemail, and then I never heard from that man again.
Probably didn't want you to ask too many questions.
Yeah, but it was really weird. I feel like he felt like we were just some stupid Black kids, you know? I feel like that's what he thought, honestly. Like when he first came up to us, the first thing he basically said was the money, you know? And I definitely would have loved that money. Yeah, I would have definitely loved that money. But like, again, I have to ask a lot of questions with that, you know, like I wasn't really sure. And then after that, that just was so, it just rubbed me the wrong way. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, where did he come from? You know?
Did he have like a checkbook? Was he just prepared to write it on the spot or something?
He said he was just going to send it to our banks. He said he could send it to our banks. But yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, sounds good. And then and another thing too, and I'll say this now, because I mean, it's whatever now. I'll tell you why I'll say this now, but I kept it from our group. I let my buddy Mir know, and then I wish he was here. He could tell you, like, because me and him talked about this for a while too. I kept it from my group because there was rumor going on within my group, and this is why I kind of pulled away from my group, that someone in my group was charging people $50 to come to our rallies. And I never, ever said people had to pay money to come anywhere. I just wanted people to come. You know what I mean? I wanted people to participate. And that started happening. And then I found out totally once people started commenting on our posts, like Black Lives Matter Part 2. You know what I mean? And I was like, what do you mean Black Lives Matter Part 2? People was like, oh, well, it cost me $50. But my friend said she didn't have to pay anything. I'm like, who charged you $50? Oh, we had to pay $50 to come to the rally. We thought you guys were making tons of money. What? You know? But yeah, that started going on, and I started pulling away from that. And I kind of, the person who was doing it, I'm not going to say their name or nothing like that, just because they know. But I don't need to shame them. You know what I mean? I don't need to blast them out here on here. But yeah, that's the main reason why I kind of pulled out of that there. And yeah, but the group started off initially as, you know, it started off really, really good. And yeah, it started going bad then. But basically with that, that's pretty much it with my group up there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, there's a lot there. Let's start with this. What's the name? What was the name of the group?
The 2020 Freedom Fighters.
Oh, okay, that was the name of it. Okay, so does it still exist?
Yeah, they're still doing little things with it up there. I guess basically what they said, it was a misunderstanding for something. Somebody was supposed to give money. Some people were supposed to give money for something, and it might have been a misunderstanding, but the people didn't think it was a misunderstanding. So I don't like my name attached to things like that. You know what I mean? Especially scamming people who I want to be involved in something in our community, that something that's bigger than us. So, you know what I mean? I just kind of stayed out of that, and distanced myself from the whole situation completely. Even though I'm the one who started the whole group, you know what I mean? I'm not keeping my name attached to, you know, robbing people, you know? Yeah, they still operate, do little things up there, but it's not nearly as effective as it used to be. And maybe that's because times are changing now and people aren't really interested in activism or, you know, human rights and whatever, you know? You want to know something else that's crazy? I said this on the news report up there. Another reason why I really wanted to get into that at that point of time was when I first came back to Wilkes-Barre, I went to Turkey Hill. And when I came out of the Turkey Hill, I had my backpack on, right? I had my backpack on, and before I left, I threw a lemonade in there that I just bought, right? I just bought this lemonade. And I walked out of the store, started walking up the road. It's a little bit dark outside, right? Cop pulls over. He pulls over there. Hops out of his car. Hey, what are you doing? I'm going home. I just got, you know, I just buying something from the store. What's in your backpack? A lemonade. Let me see. Take off your backpack. Okay, yes, sir. You know what I mean? I'm not thinking nothing about it. You know, this is early 2020 here. Okay, yes, sir. So I take off my backpack. As soon as I start taking off my backpack, this man reaches for his gun immediately. I'm looking like this. What in the world? You know what I mean? I'm looking at this man like, what are you doing? Like, I'm just taking off my backpack here. I'm listening to what you said. And I was like, whoa, okay. I'm just going to get my ID. So I turned it over and dumped it out. My ID fell on the ground. I mean, my wallet fell on the ground. I picked up my wallet. And what I did was I handed him my military ID. I didn't hand him my driver's license. Gave him my military ID. He looked at it. Oh, you're in the military? Oh, yeah, yeah. I apologize. Oh, no. Oh, thank you for your service, buddy. Oh, my goodness. I didn't mean to, you know, enough. I'm like, what in the world? He's like, yeah, you should join the Wilkes-Barre police. And I blasted him. When I started doing all that stuff there with my group and everything, I let the news know and everything that they were doing there. That happened to me twice up there. That happened to me twice before I started the group up there.
Yeah.
Both of the situations were similar there. Yeah. Some weird stuff. And then they apologized to me. The captain of the police station over there apologized to me and everything after I let the whole news, you know, everywhere know about that. But I felt so disrespected. What if I didn't have the military ID that night? What would have happened to me? It's a little bit dark out. Nobody knows. There's no cameras around. You know what I mean? I walked a little bit further away from Turkey. I'm getting shot in cold blood. Nobody's going to care.
And you weren't driving? You were just walking?
Yeah, it was the Turkey Hill was right by my house there.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's another reason what motivated me to do that group too, because when I first seen the George Floyd thing there, that hit home kind of like, because, and as I get older and older, do I think there's racist people in the world? Yeah, 100%. Go to a restaurant with me around here. go to a restaurant with me. You'll see just people are like, what? Like, it's like I killed their mother, you know, when I walk. But yeah. Truthfully, it's not everybody. Not everybody's racist. Some people are just bad people. Some people are good people. That's what it is.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what it is. And that seems to ring true with what you're saying also. I just want to clarify one point. So this was all happening in Wilkes-Barre at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right. And now you're somewhere else, though, right?
Yep, yep, yeah. So now I'm down in Northumberland here. So nice little place. I'm not going to lie. It hasn't been so nice the last year and a half here, though. There's been, I don't know what people are doing out here. I don't know what the police are doing out here. But, like, since I came down here, I got the police called on me 6 times. I've been at my car searched 2 times by the police for drugs. That's a whole thing that happened. But I'm past that now. That I could go on with that, too. I can go on with
that. Yeah. That's just so bizarre to me because I'm kind of used to hearing that kind of thing happening in Philadelphia. Yeah. I just did not think it was happening outside the big cities.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Up here, there's not a lot of black people. So that's, you know what I mean? So once they see one, it's kind of a problem. But, you know, me and the police officers around here, we're all right. No, we're all right. But, yeah, when I first came out here, it wasn't so great. I mean, when I came back here, I was actually in foster care around this area too. So, So when I came back here as an adult, it wasn't so nice to me. I started realizing.
Yeah. I was going to say, eventually there should be like not too many people in the area. So at a certain point they would just know you, I would hope. Isn't that the whole point of,
that's what it is now. But another thing too, though, a lot of like black and Spanish people have moved in the area since I came out here. Like it's just been a boom, like it.
Yeah,
it
not even overnight. That long. Like it's,
last year there was like 2 murders out here. Like that's so unheard of for this area. Like some dude got shot in the neck and another dude got gunned down outside of this bar called Laughter's in Sunbury. And you know what I mean? It's just that stuff's crazy. I'm not sure like what's causing that, but I have an idea. I feel like people are desperate out here. I think desperation breeds crime. You know, things are getting expensive. Basic things like bread and eggs and your bills, if everything keeps going up and people's pays are staying the same, they can't make enough money. You know what I mean? People are going to get desperate. And again, desperation breeds crime. They're going to start acting out.
This could be a whole episode on its own, but it's a combination of mental health and just the economic conditions that are driving people to desperation with the, inflationary policies. That's a lot of what we talk about on this show and in the Mises Caucus and the party in general, just, the government policy that's leading to the conditions that we're suffering from right now. Like a lot of it can be traced back to that. But that is a good transition point for, let's just start with, you can talk about this as much or as little as you want to, but what is the current role that you're in the state government? Well, how's that been?
I work for DHS right now. I'm an income maintenance caseworker, and I have to say this because, somebody's probably going to hear about this and I'm going to get in trouble about it. But my views clearly don't match up with the state's. So we'll say that.
Okay. So is that the state government or the federal government? I just want to clarify.
I'm working for right now.
Right.
I'm working for the state. I used to work.
Oh, that is the state. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. I used to work for the federal government there. Not anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. That's when I was up in Wilkes there. I'm working for the state government down here. And basically what we deal with is, anything from food stamps to, energy assistance to, medical assistance. And I can go in about medical assistance there. And this is my personal opinion on this. Got to say that. So, So my personal opinion about medical assistance is I feel like the government purposely, and this is a combination of the state and federal government, they purposely, make Medicaid bad. Like it's the government's fault that a lot of people don't accept it. You ever heard like a lot of doctors and maybe dentists or, places where you can go get eye care, they don't take Medicaid. Have you heard of that? Or medical assistance?
I've heard of some places like that.
Yeah, I know quite a few out here. Most of the places out here do not take medical assistance or Medicaid. You got to go to places that might not be as good. They accept it from the government. But I'll tell you why. the reason is, like, the government either doesn't pay them, the medical providers, either their full amount or pays them, like, after a long period of time. Now, let me ask you, if you worked at your job and you did a good job, you put in your 40 hours that week, and then your boss decided to pay you 6 months later or at half the the pay you were supposed to get paid, you're going to continue working there?
No.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that's, and that's how a lot of these medical providers be, how they feel. But that's what the government does. They do that, but then they claim they want health care for all. They want to make sure everybody's healthy and strong and everything. That's baloney. If you really wanted that, just pay the medical providers what they want to be paid. You know what I mean? I mean, you already tax us crazy out here. You tax us more than enough. Like, literally, from this throughout this whole pandemic here, they've kept people, like, open and... some people don't even live in this state anymore, right? And they've been open for medical assistance, and that's been getting paid for by our taxes. So they're not even living in the state no more. It's, they're not even supposed to be eligible for it. But since the pandemic, they had to stay open for medical assistance. And you know how much money that wasted? You know how much of our tax money that wasted? A lot. I think it cost about... So me, I'm actually eligible for medical assistance because I was in foster care. I'm actually starting to figure out I'm eligible for former foster care benefits. I'm going to stop being eligible once I turn 26 for a lot of them. But I recently just found it out. They try to hide it. So, you know, you can't apply and, you know, we go to jail and all that stuff after we get out of foster care. But there's a lot of benefits you can actually apply for. There's actually a benefit where you can go to college for basically like 5 years and the state completely pays for it. Well, the state doesn't pay for it. We pay for it with our taxes, but you know what I mean? The state pays for it.
Yeah,
there's a lot of programs like that. So I was actually eligible for medical assistance. I found out about that last year in August before I started working for the state there. And I just applied. It doesn't matter how much money I'm making or my resources or anything. I'm automatically eligible. Governor Wolf may be one of the only good things he did there. I don't know. basically that happened. And I applied. And then I started realizing, like it costs about like $700 a month, I think, just to keep me on medical assistance. That's how much they pay the, I think they were paying Geisinger there. That's who my healthcare provider was through. I have my work insurance now. But that's a lot of money for someone who hasn't lived in the state for 2 years, right? Since 2020, but their medical assistance had to stay open. That's coming out of our tax money right there. That's coming out of our tax money, and there's nothing we could have did about it. But it's rules that they put up for the pandemic. That's my personal opinion, what I think about that. I feel like it was stupid. I feel like it's wasteful. I mean, yeah. But, anyways, though, they can't even go to all the places they want to go. Like, I don't know who said it first. Maybe it was Obama who said it first. Like, you can keep your doctors. That's baloney. You can't keep your doctors because your doctors aren't getting paid. If you want to keep Medicaid for all, you know what I mean? Actually pay the people, you know what I mean? Or else stop taxing them so much for it, you know? Like, it doesn't make any sense. But, I mean, that's just my personal opinion on it.
Yeah, I mean... can't disagree with any of that. It's just like some of that I wasn't aware of the specifics, but you know, just the brokenness of the system is certainly not new to me. Maybe some people are hearing it for the first time, but yeah, it's good to hear from the inside that it's not just like us from the outside seeing this as a problem, that you know, it is just about more as we get.
Oh, could you say that again? You kind of cut out there.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying, like, it is, like, even from the out, like, from the outside, it looks like the system is broken. But now just hearing from the inside that it is as broken as we think it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's some good people in there who really, truly want to help people out. But, like, the system doesn't allow them to. And that's my personal opinion. Again, I believe the system really doesn't allow you to. I believe it's set up to not help people. I believe it's set up to appear to help people, but whoever wrote those rules and laws didn't want to help people.
Right.
They help themselves by keeping money in their pockets and keeping the poor poor, the middle class poor, and then keeping the rich right where they're at.
But well, yeah, I think that is a good. Yeah, that is a good transition. So, how did you hear about the Libertarian Party and what motivated you to run for office?
My sister Angela. Basically, I came down here and visited her. Her husband had passed away in a car accident, so I came down to, you know, comfort my sister and my nieces and everything. So that all started happening towards the end of 2020 there. But, you know, I wasn't living down here at that point of time. But basically, me and my sister, we always, like, talk about the government and how shady it is all the time and all this stuff with the foster care. And my sister, Angela, like, she's 27. She's about to be 28 this year. And, you know, we always have crazy long debates and we're always arguing, not arguing, but you know what I mean? Doing little debates,
yeah.
Brothers and sisters. But it's always about the government we're arguing about, right? But basically my sister told me one day, I was arguing and I was saying, you know, I came up with this little thing and, you know, I listened to Kanye before. So I said to my sister, we were talking about like gun laws. Right. And I told her, I was like, okay, what's a king to a God? What's a God to a non-believer? What's a gun law to a criminal who doesn't obey the law? It's nothing. They're just going to get the gun anyways and disobey the law. People have a whole big problem with, like we're definitely against the war on drugs, but, but I'll tell you, it's crazy. There's so many laws against drugs in this country. There's so many damn laws. You're not allowed to smoke marijuana. You can't have cocaine. You're not allowed to do this, not allowed to do that. And don't get me wrong. I know drugs have a big impact on people's lives and everything. And I'm not doing drugs. You know what I mean? I've seen what it does to some people. But drug dealers still get the drugs. I can literally go right out here to this gas station, literally 10 minutes away, or not even 10 minutes, 5 minutes away, and I can have coke in my hand in less than an hour. But it's illegal. It's illegal. How is that possible? Because criminals do not obey the law. They don't give a damn about the law. You know what I mean? It has no effect on them. So a gun law to somebody who's not lawful has no effect. It's literally, it doesn't make any sense. We were talking about that, and I said that to my sister. My sister told me, you know what you are? You're a damn libertarian, Elijah. And I'm like, what's a libertarian? That's what I said.
Libertarians.
I said, what's a libertarian? And she said, oh, you don't know what a libertarian is? I said, no. And I was like, what is that? She said, oh, it's like the third biggest political party in the United States. I'm like, oh, there's other ones? She said, yeah, there's other ones. You know, this was back in 2020, at the end of 2020. I was like, oh, I had no clue. And she explained it to me. And she was like, well, this is what they believe in. This is certain things. And I was like, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes complete sense. And, you know, yeah, from that point on, I switched my my voters thing. Oh, I was registered as a Democrat for some reason. I'll tell you the story behind this. I didn't know how to register to vote when I came back from the Marine Corps. I've never voted, right, in my life before then. When I was in the Marine Corps, I never voted. A lot of people who are in the military don't vote just because we don't have the time. All those mail-in ballots that people were supposedly supposed to get, we never get them. I've never seen one person vote in the military. I've never seen it. We don't have the time. First of all, they don't get the ballots to us in time. Somebody might disclose it a little bit, like, hey, this election's going on, but then we have to go right back to work. And that we don't vote in there. But yeah, that's a whole nother story. But when I got back, I didn't know how to register to vote. I didn't even know what was going on. But I was at one of these rallies. There was a Trump truck. And then there was a Black Lives Matter rally going on. And they were both just clashing into each other up in Scranton. Some crazy stuff, right, going on. And I was like, whoa. But this lady, she was on this this table by the courthouse there. And she said, hey, are you registered to vote? And I said, oh, no. She's like, do you want to vote? And I was like, yeah, I want to vote. You know what I mean? This is going to be my first time voting. So, she was like, oh, I can help you. What's your name? And I gave her my name. She's like, oh, what's your address? I'm like, oh, here. And she was like, okay, all right, we'll get you set up to vote. And I was like, okay. next thing you know, I get a Democrat thing in the mail over there. I guess I get the voter's registration in the mail, and I'm a Democrat voter or a registered Democrat over there. That's crazy, huh? I didn't even know.
I could tell similar stories, but that's, I'll save that for another time. Like, it's not, it just it's not the first time for something like that.
Yeah, that was some crazy stuff. I didn't even know how that happened, but but yeah. Yeah, I switched it to libertarian and everything, and yeah, here I am now.
Yeah, wow. So when did you get in touch with the party and get interested in running for office then?
As soon as I looked online, I was just online one day, and I seen that the senator for our, I believe it's our district up here, I forget what his name is, it's like John Gordon, I seen that he was resigning. So I was looking into that. I was like, hold on, if he's resigning, somebody, most likely Linda Schlegel, who's in our district, is probably going to run for that. You know, she's been running unopposed for years. She's probably going to try to move up to that position there. And people are probably going to vote for it because this area is mainly Republican, you know? So I was like, hold on. If she moves from there, her seat's going to be open. So that means there's going to be a special election. And, you know, I started reviewing this stuff. Me and my sister always talk about this stuff. So I had a little bit of knowledge about it. And, yeah, I contacted the Libertarian Party on Instagram. I contacted them, and somebody reached back out to me, and they asked me for some information. And it was a little bit of a cat and mouse game at first there, because I couldn't really get to somebody. I kept getting, like, moved to this person, to this person, to this person. And then I finally got to talk to BJ there. And, yeah, pretty much after that, we met, and we discussed a couple things, and we talked on the phone a couple times, and I talked with other people in the party there, and, you know, they introduced me to a whole world out here. I didn't even realize there was this many people out here with the Libertarian Party.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than you think. And there's a lot more people who have same thoughts and ideologies as the Libertarian Party. They just don't know it yet. Just because they don't know anything, they don't know anything other than the Republican and Democrat Party. I feel like a lot more people than, yeah, basically what I just said. There's a lot more people out here who are libertarian that just don't know it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, actually, since you mentioned it, I'll bring it up real quick. To you, I'll say, I'll talk of the details with you about it after the show, but basically, the Mises Caucus and some other groups are going to be working together on a special project coming up in Philadelphia that's going to be like a intro to liberty type class. I think you might be interested in that. It's going to be in Philadelphia, so, you know, hopefully you'll be able to make it for that when we actually do it. But for everybody else, go back and watch episode 42 of the show. We talk a lot about it there. So I definitely want to talk to you about that more after the show, because that's exactly what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the word out there about, like, just starting off with the ideas, and chances are, like, the people we're talking to, they'll already agree with at least half of it anyway. They just won't know that it's actually tied up with, like, a system of beliefs that they probably haven't heard of.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was saying with my sister there, like, I was just talking to my sister about things that I thought was right. And then my sister was like, you're a libertarian. And I was like, what's that? You know, I had no clue. Mm-hmm. And now I know.
Yeah, exactly. So that's exciting. And I wanted to make sure, because you already sent me like a rough platform that you had and everything. But it looks to me like, well, I mean, this is just you. This is every candidate. Need some sort of a team behind them, any volunteers that they could get. So if someone wanted to get in touch with you, possibly help out, volunteer, like, how could they do that?
Oh, you can contact me at my phone number. It's 570-445-7459. Or else you can reach out to me in my email. It's Elijah John Scratching. So what you see on the screen there, ELIJAH. Last name Scratching, it's SCRETCHING. Just with my middle name in the middle there.
I'll take that down and put it in the show notes at the end of the show. You can just drop it in the chat that we have.
Okay.
I can put it on afterwards. But what else is there? Oh, why don't you talk about, like, just pick like your top two or three issues that you want to talk about when you're campaigning?
I feel like the top three issues, and right now, especially with everything going on in the country and people wanting to take guns away crazy just because of the mass shootings going on and everything, and I'm not saying just because it is a big thing, but I think there's a simple solution to that, honestly. I feel like if we were proactive rather than reactive, you know, could stop a lot of these mass shootings. First and foremost, you know, lock the doors, you know what I mean? Keep them shut and everything, right? But even going forward, place armed security in schools. We have enough, we pay enough money in taxes for this, you know what I mean? We pay more than enough money in taxes for this. Place armed security in schools. Give a veteran $15 an hour, and I guarantee he'll sit up in that school and protect those children. You can kill two birds with one stone there. You can give a veteran a job and protect children at the same time. Anybody who doesn't vote for that, I don't know. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, anybody who doesn't agree on that, like, can come together in the House of Representatives and agree that, hey, you know what I mean? This might be something good. We can, you know, we can do something with this. So, I mean, that's a way to solve, like, a lot of the school shootings there. Put a vet there, they're not letting anybody touch those children, you know? So that's one of the one things. I believe there needs to be better security in school, armed security in school. At least two per school. Mm-hmm. Second there, I believe it's the we got to address the rise in crime. And that stems from people being desperate again there, you know, because desperation breeds crime. We need to work on, you know, why are people committing the crimes right now? People are committing the crimes right now because they're broke. Things like gas, groceries, a haircut, you know, basic things cost more than they should. And that's because of inflation. We need to do something about that. We need to bring more smaller businesses into the area and encourage people to open up businesses and do things like that within the community here. You know what I mean? Just so we can build a solid foundation in our community. We don't have to reach out to outside sources and have people traveling out of the city for things that they can possibly get in the city. You know what I mean? Because people start buying stuff within the community, start doing things in the community there. It's going to build a stronger community. And then third, the third thing there I really was thinking about, I have a bunch of them there, but I feel like another thing, and I talked to a lot of vets out here about this. A lot of vets out here, they don't have access to the VA like people think they do. We had a gentleman over here right in the Wise's parking lot. We had him collapse, and me and my sister ran over and started helping him. He just collapsed on the ground. He had like some underlying conditions because of Agent Orange back in Vietnam. So, So he collapsed on the ground there. I asked him, are you getting VA disability benefits? No, I don't know how to apply right. I'm not doing it right. People are not helping me. Of course they're not helping them because they don't want them to get the benefits from the government there. But basically, I had to drive his car home, and then my sister drove my car home. But it was a whole situation with that man. He was passed out over here, and he can't make it up to the VA. He can't make it up because it's an hour and a half away. Like, why don't we have more veteran centers around here? Like, just do something for these people. Like, it ticks me off just seeing some of these older veterans out here. You know what I mean? They did everything the government told them to do, and the government can't even throw them a damn bone. Like, it ticks me off. It really does. Especially when I see some of these old vets out here, and they talk about I seen this other dude, this other guy. I'm not going to call him a dude, but he was another Vietnam vet. And this guy was up in Wilkes-Barre there. Now, there is a VA up in Wilkes-Barre, and that's where I actually did see this man. But he wasn't getting disability benefits, and I believe he should have. This man had nothing here, nothing where his nose should be. It was nothing. And I got caught staring at him. You know, I was only, at the time when I came back, I was just like, what the hell happened to you? And then I'm just looking at him, right? And then he looks at me, and he's like, go ahead, ask, youngster. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, sir. I didn't mean to. He's like, just ask me. Stop being a, you know what I mean? I was like, okay. Yeah. You know how the Vietnam vets say, they say whatever. They're, you know, they're a little bit unhinged there. But I was like, yeah, what happened to you? And he was like, yeah, a grenade shrapnel hit my nose and blew it off. And Yeah, no, oh. I'm just like this. I'm like, can you get a prosthetic? No, the VA won't pay for it. What do you mean the VA won't pay for it? You literally were out here doing the government's bidding and they can't even give you a fake nose? Like, that's crazy. Or give you something to do something with it? He's like, yeah, I've been trying to get them to pay for this, but they won't do it. I'm going to try to pay for it. My insurance don't cover it. And I was like, wow, that's insane. Another gentleman down here, he was on Camp Lejeune. The sweetest old man, right? He lives over here in Northumberland. He's the nicest old man. But you wouldn't know. He has like 2 silver stars. He has a Purple Heart. He has all types of crazy stuff from being back in the war there. But yeah, so basically he went to Lejeune and he got cancer because of the water, right? This man, he can't even hold his coffee. I felt so bad for having him stand there for a while because he was just standing there and shaking it. He was spilling the hot coffee all over his arms and hands, not even noticing it and stuff like that. And this man, he was telling me about, oh, this happened to my buddy and this happened and this happened. And then he was telling me he had cancer from Lejeune. And I could clearly see, you know, he was definitely not in good shape there. But, yeah, he said he was fighting with the VA and lawyers to try to get some sort of benefit because he didn't receive nothing. He didn't receive nothing, and it is well documented that he has cancer, you know? Yeah. So I feel like we need more veteran centers in the area. I feel like we need something for the vets out here. I can give you stories all day about veterans out here.
Oh, yeah. It's one thing to read about it. It's another thing to hear people's stories. And it's just enough to know that it's not just a few odd cases.
No, it's it's every time I come up to an older veteran, it ticks me off so bad. It makes me want to do stuff to the VA. But let me not say that on live.
Yeah, I know. So let's do this. Let's try to end it on a bit of a high note here. So I was trying to think of something. Like when you and maybe not all of your siblings, but when you and some of your siblings to get together, other than like debate about politics, what's something fun you like to do now?
So we get together sometimes. We just got together for one of my niece's birthday parties there. Well, actually, it was a joint birthday party for both of my nieces. One of my sisters likes to do both of her kids' birthdays together there. So all my brothers and sisters came up and everything. And actually, I mean, it's, you know, I really don't hold any vengeance in my heart for anything, really. I'd let things go in the past a lot of the times. You know what I mean? If it's not going to help me in my future, I really let it go. My birth mom actually came up to our the thing there, and, you know, she gave us some money for my kid. So I was like, okay, well, you didn't give me nothing when I was growing up, but here you go, thank you. You know what I mean? But we all got together there. It was a blast. We were all roller skating. We were all playing the games over there. We went to this gas station and, you know, probably made the people a little bit mad because my sisters and brothers are all acting a little bit crazy in there. And, you know, trying to get me to buy stuff and, you know, me asking them to buy stuff. Man. But, yeah, we get together and we have a good time every now and then. And then my sisters love drinking wine and they all get crazy. And yeah, it's a good time, though, when we get together now. Yeah, it really is. My brother, he's actually in the Army now, one of my brothers. He's over in Korea, so he didn't get to come with us last time there. He has a girlfriend out there, so he barely talks to us anymore. but you know, we get together and we have a good time now. You know, it's definitely a difference between back then and now. You know, now that we're older and we're able to be adults.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you all still stay in touch. Like that's really good to hear. You know, it looks like you guys are on a good path now. So any closing thoughts or anywhere people can follow what you're doing, like what social medias you got set up and anything like that?
Yeah, I have a page set up on Facebook right now. It's a public figure page or page there. It's just my first and my last name. You can just look it up there. I believe I got like 900 like followers on there right now. It's like 400 likes. That's the way you can identify that. I had another Facebook before when I was a little bit younger. Don't go on that one. It's just a couple pictures. But yeah, you could definitely follow me on Facebook there. Message me anytime.
Yeah, we got to get you on Twitter too. Now that you're running for office, that's essentially a must. even if you delete it right afterwards, you really got to do that. So we'll talk afterwards. So just stay on, and I'll wrap up this show. So thanks, Elijah, for coming on. It was great having you. Tune in next week, everyone, for another exciting episode of Take Human Action PA. And until next time, don't forget to take human action. Bye. Okay, should be right.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.